both of them are the leaders of the Govardhan retreat, and we'll be hearing them speak about Vrindavan in general, about the retreat. So I'll let them speak, start immediately.
Hare Krishna, Bhurijan Prabhu. We had some
very see you.
Same, and but it would be better if we would meet at the foot of Giriraj, like your picture shows in the back. I think we want today churn up the Vrindavan mood, and therefore I would like to ask you, what is it exactly about Vrindavan that has made it so special for you? I think you lived 10 years in Vrindavan, as a,
and
13 even,
and then half the year for 20 years.
Oh, and then half the year for 20 years. Yes. And now you go regularly to the Govardhan retreat, let us say, at least when it's possible. I think we had 2 years of lockdown. But I do know that the Govardhan retreat center, which came out of the Govardhan retreats, is almost completed, and there is an hope, an aspiration, an idea to have the Govardhan retreats the coming Kartik 2022 in our own facility. So there must be some attraction in Vrindavan which has pulled you, who is originally born in New York, away from your American culture, and pulled you forcibly to Vrindavan. And I think if you share this today with all of us, we hope that some of that attraction will become understandable to us and even experienced by us.
Thank you. Of course, this is a very deep question. What's special about Vrindavan? And I think my answer to that begins in Hong Kong, where I was serving Srila Prabhupada in for very formative years of my Krishna consciousness from 1970 to 1974. And Prabhupada came to Hong Kong in 1974, one of the four times he came. And we were in, I was with Prabhupada in a hotel room in the Hong Kong Hilton, and it was a very, very wonderful facility, and the preaching there was so difficult, and we were kids basically speaking. And Prabhupada turned to me and said, when you've been preaching for 10 years, you can go and live in Vrindavan. So I think that's really the seed of me going to Vrindavan, and I never had a thought about that. And then later on in the year, in 1974, Prabhupada was taking lunch prasadam in Vrindavan in his room in Krishna Balaram Mandir, but nothing else was completed. The temple wasn't completed, and his room wasn't completed really. So somehow or another, I was asked to fan Prabhupada while he was taking prasadam, and the person who was Satsarupa Raj, who had asked me to fan Prabhupada while he was taking prasadam, because there was no fans, there was no electricity, he said, don't let Prabhupada take his lunch peacefully, don't engage him in any conversation. So I wasn't saying anything, and then Prabhupada, as he was eating, he turned to me with a look in his eye that was the glee of almost like a young child, and he said, so what do you think about Vrindavan? And it was so, and I at that time I couldn't respond in a way that matched his enthusiasm. So very often nowadays I'll think, how would I respond to him now? I couldn't say anything then. But now I would say, oh, Vrindavan is the most special place. It's and maybe perhaps he would even say, why? And I would say, because it's alive. It's alive, and it has a sweetness that that I've not experienced anywhere else. I've been to in the Himalayas, and there you get very deep peace, so deep. But then when you get to Vrindavan, it's like being home, and there's a sweetness. And I have a picture in my mind also of you, Sachin Andramaraj, when we were once walking to the Sakhi villages, and the dust on the roads that we were walking on was very, very soft, like powder. And I remember us rolling in that dust, and I have a picture in my mind. That's an unofficial picture. But very, very happy to be touching the dust of Vrindavan. Yes, very special. What's special about it for you, Maharaj? You spent every year for so many years, you've chanted and chanted in Vrindavan. What's special for you?
I would also like to say it is like you. It is alive with sweetness, and you can touch it everywhere. When I go to Vrindavan, I regularly read in an ancient book of Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, where he glorifies Vrindavan, and I have taken out some verses over the years which somehow try to explain the sweetness. One of them is, what to speak of Sri Vrindavan Chanda, Krishna? And what to speak of Sri Radha, the queen of Vrindavan, as well as the gopis? Even from a leaf of a tree, the whole world is overwhelmed with sweetness, even from a leaf. You somehow enter into an atmosphere. It's as palpable as if you, let us say, walk over land, and then all of a sudden you are entering, not all of a sudden, you enter into a lake for swimming, and the moment you touch with your toes the lake, you know, I have entered a different atmosphere. It is compact with another element, and the element in Vrindavan is sweetness. Therefore, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, he asks a rhetorical question. He says, where do living entities easily attain Krishna? Where are the wonderful transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna found? And where one can see the highest form of bliss due to the worship of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna? Oh, brothers and sisters, just listen. As I tell you the secret, everything of this is available in the abode of Vrindavan. So, yes, sweetness which is alive there, which is palpable, it means you can really feel it, has attracted me in Vrindavan. Just last Kartik, 2 months ago, or 1.5 months ago, when I entered from the airport, the boundaries of Vrindavan, I was tired. So many regulations and complications for an international traveler. I came out of the taxi half dead. I stepped onto the road of Krishna Balaram temple. I felt the sweetness immediately. It was like a stream, entering a stream that brought me right to Prabhupada Samadhi. I always like to start my pilgrimage in Vrindavan by paying my obeisances in Srila Prabhupada Samadhi. And from there, I was swept with to the altar, altars of Krishna Balaram Mandir, and I finally was thrown into another ocean from there before the lotus feet of Radha Shyam Sundar. Everyone can feel it. The atheist can feel it. The non-believer can feel it. The sweetness, the living sweetness in Vrindavan.
Yes. The Prabhupada once said that even if a non-devotee comes to Vrindavan, they will experience separation from Krishna.
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, it's very, it's unique.
Burijam,
it's like a magic bubble that you enter.
Yes, 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 yes. It's Burijam Prabhu, I remember that I used to see you in Vrindavan regularly, and we would sometimes make excursions to different holy places, Yamuna, Govardhan, and one time you began to reveal to me a dream which you had, and you consistently wrote about this in emails you sent to me. I think it would be really very nice if you share this dream today that gave birth to the desire to hold the Govardhan retreats. It's a long time back. I think we are doing this now for more than 20 years.
20 years, more than 20 years.
Yes, and but the inspiration came out of a vision, so to say, which you originally shared with me. So maybe it is a good subject matter if you share your dream that brought you to...
If I remember correctly, it wasn't a dream where I was asleep. But I was really thinking of what would I like to offer Prabhupada, what type of an experience would I like to offer the devotees so that they would be happy in their Krishna consciousness and do that as a service for Prabhupada. So I was thinking like that, and what came to my mind, and this was in the 80s, I believe. 1980, or maybe a little bit later than that, 1990, perhaps somewhere around that, and the inspiration that came to me, it would be so nice if all the devotees were in a place that they would stay for some days, and at this time I had no idea about Govardhan, and I didn't have any idea about Govardhan Retreat Center or any idea about the retreats that we would be doing for 20 years. But the thought that I had was that it would be so nice if the devotees could stay in one place, and in that place, almost like a bubble of sorts, in that place they would hear and chant about Krishna, and it would be, and each of their senses would be engaged with the fragrance of Krishna consciousness. Their taste would be engaged with the eating of prasadam, and their eyes would be engaged with the beauty of the place. And of course, their ears would be engaged in hearing Krishna katha, and their bodies in dancing, etc. So I had this vision, and then it was an inspiration, I would call it, rather than more than a dream or a vision. But then just a couple of years ago, I really thought that after or during one of our Govardhan retreats, I really thought that vision was this, just what we were actually doing. Because while we were by Giriraj, the most beautiful sight was there of the beautiful land of Sri Vrindavan Dham, and the special fragrances of Vrindavan, like the, you know, there's always in the background the scent of the cows and the burning of the cow dung. And then when we would have the Krishna Kirtan, the kirtans were going on, the devotees would be experiencing the happiness of, or getting a glimpse of the experience of the happiness of being with Krishna. And that by participating in that experience, I would also get a glimpse of that experience. So I think we have, we're on our way to do that. And it has to do with, maybe the question comes up a little later, about the memories we have. But I remember there was one day, and you'll remember this day, that it was raining. We had one plan to have our kirtan at Govindakund, I believe. But it started raining so unseasonably. And then the kirtans we had that day in our tent, in the shelter of Giriraj Govardhan there, and with the rain pouring down, and it was the very day that we got our permission to actually legally build it, the Govardhan Retreat Center. And it was just, it was a different realm of experience, almost without material minds being present. But what I could understand from that is that if we would just engage ourselves in hearing and chanting about Krishna and have our minds engaged in this, in the process of glorifying Krishna in this way, for no other reason than to glorify Krishna, then Giriraj was pleased. And we were experiencing the pleasure of pleasing Haridasa Varjo, the most wonderful, kind servant of Krishna, of Lord Hari. So that was something of a memory that I have that really, really brought the the vision of being in, creating a situation where devotees could have that experience. Yes, so that.
Yes, so much about Krishna consciousness is really about the experience, not the only the philosophy, which can become an ideology if there is no living spiritual experience backing it up. I remember on the point of vision that when you talk to me about bringing people to the shelter of Giriraj and letting them experience Krishna consciousness and the Lord's presence in Vrindavan, that I looked out for things when this would happen, when the dream or vision or inspiration, which soon became my own inspiration also, in other words, I came on board. When this happened, then I was very satisfied. And I remember a particular incident. We always, after the kirtans, after the lectures, we request the audience to turn around. We have a tent right at the pandal, it's called a big pandal, right at the foot of Giriraj. We can, in other words, see his darshan from where we sit and hold our retreats and hold the lectures and so on. So we tell them after a lecture or a kirtan to turn to Giriraj and to either pray, either be silent and think about what they had just heard, or somehow stay in the atmosphere of Giriraj. So there was one person who sees the world through a very different set of eyes and mind than I. And he had almost challenged me, what's so special about Vrindavan? And I said, you come and you will answer this question by your own experience. And so he had come because we are close, but we see things differently. He had come on my invitation, a little unwilling, you could say. And during one of these sessions, I don't know who it was who gave them this session, who gave this session. He was asked, now turn to Giriraj and pray. It was a session, I think, on prayer or Krishna conscious contemplation or reflection, reflect on what you have heard and share it with your neighbor. It was one of these things. So he turned, and when we left the pandal, I met him on that footpath which leads to out of the place where we have our programs, the Gopinath Gardens. He looked at me, and there was something in his eyes which was... he was digesting some experience. So I asked, so what went on for you? And he said, I have to speak to you. And he pulled me to the side. We went off the path to the shade of a tree. And he said, I asked Giriraj 3 questions. And he answered them all. And I said, not possible, you are imagining something. And I said, don't be a sahajiya. God doesn't talk to us so easily. I was thinking, I won't let this go so easily. He will have a tough Sachinandan Swami now. I will test him. Then he said to me, no, you know when something is true. You know when something is an imagination. I asked my questions, I have my answers. They are very precise. One of them I didn't want to hear, but it's true. And I will have to reconsider everything. And then he turned to me and he said, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for inviting me. I still remember this, yes, Krishna, so much about Krishna consciousness is about the experience, not just the theoretical understanding, because it's the experience which will keep you alive over all the years. It's the experience which will change your heart and purify it. So the vision to give an experience to devotees.
Not for me to give an experience, but yeah. To provide like a chamber.
Yes.
Yes. In which that experience, because the experience, is, as you pointed out, is between him and Krishna.
Yeah. Very, very nice. So... you are obviously a lecturer, and you have published many books. Most famously, I think, are these Bhagavatam Overview series. I believe you have already finished your work on the Bhagavatam, and you are now studying very minutely the Chaitanya Charitamrita in order to present it to the devotees. May I ask you, what gives you the inspiration, you could say, or the certitude to choose from all the wide spectrum of Bhagavatam subjects and the wide spectrum of interesting lecture subjects, what gives you the inspiration each year to choose one particular subject? I know there are subjects like churning the nectar, you are very creative subjects, sailing down the third canto of the Bhagavatam. Your books have titles like Unveiling His Lotus Feet and the backward glance. So for each year you choose a particular title, a first subject and then title. And what gives you the experience to do so? How do you decide, this year I'm going to speak on this subject?
Will you let me ask you this question after the same question after I answer it for myself?
Good. Yes.
I'll answer first and then I'll ask you.
Acha. Good.
Because you just asked me, so I should be polite and answer your.
Okay.
Your question. Well, I just. There's two parts. One is that. I'm a student, and Prabhupada once told me that teaching was the best service for me. So I'm studying Prabhupada's books, and now Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's sort of, there's two points for me. One is that I have to find something that's alive for me. That I'm reading something and it really has meaning for me, because if I can't teach something and pass it on to someone else unless it's alive for me. So that's the most important thing for me, is to find a subject that's very, even at this very moment, alive. And that, for me, that's sort of the secret of giving a class, because I take my notes and it may be something that was alive 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. And the real test for me if I'm going to be speaking is that I have to get to a particular depth on the topic more or less right before I'm going to speak on it. That I'm speaking something again that's alive for me, that's meaningful for me, because if it's not alive for me and meaningful for me, I can't imagine it being alive and meaningful for those who are listening to me speak. So to me, that's the first half, and then the second half is the organizational half, is to organize things in such a way that it fits into the program of the amount of lectures that you have. There has to be some very, very alive points and deep according to my own level of understanding. And then it has to be, then I have to think of how to explain it and make it into the segments that are suitable for the amount of time that is available. I don't know if I was exactly clear, but that's sort of what I do. That's sort of my process. Is the practical of organizational, but more important is something that's alive, that's meaningful and inspiring for me. And then my hope is to be able to express it in such a way that the devotees who are hearing. It becomes alive and meaningful for them as well, and relevant. And relevant is a very important part of this. It has to be very relevant. And yeah, that's the best I can do in explaining it. what I do. And you, Maharaj, how do you choose it? what you speak about?
I somehow put up my antenna and I wait until two things register on the antenna, two signals, not just one, but two. First of all, I also know that it has to be alive in me. It has to be a subject matter that strikes a chord, a subject matter that awakens a spark, because it's just so relevant. So I wait until that signal hits my antenna. This is relevant, this is alive, this is striking a chord within you. But then I don't go by it before I get a second signal. And that is what is important for the devotees to hear at this stage of their life. How do I know this? Well, I have, as someone who spreads Krishna consciousness as his main seva to Prabhupada, I have a lot of interaction with devotees. Just now I come from a tour through England and I met many devotees. We had in the Haveli a program with 700 people in the manor. We, even though there are still restrictions, we found ways to have safe programs so on it. And I talk with devotees. They talk to me. I ask them questions. And then I get a little bit of feeling what is important for them. So when these two signals come, from the devotees, I hear what they are thinking about, what they are concerned with. And the other signal is when something is so relevant to me that I can talk not just from the head, not just from reading notes, but with a lively concern, with a lively enthusiasm, then I choose the subject matter. Like it's this year, or in a few weeks we start with the online retreat. It will be developing divine aspirations. I know devotees were in lockdown. They were restrained to their houses. They couldn't have so many programs. They have not dialogued, maybe because the tendency is to withdraw when one is secluded. And they must have thought about the ultimate goals of their life. They must have sometimes also felt how, despite all these good aspirations, we are overwhelmed with other aspirations which have to do with our conditioned natures. So how to develop these divine aspirations, I think, is very relevant. And then I try to do this, of course, based on Prabhupada's writings, and when I talk about Vrindavan-related subjects, the writings of Prabhupada and the Goswamis and so on. Now, for me as a lecturer, there is no better place to give lectures which touch on Krishna and developing our love for Krishna than in Vrindavan Dham. I read one quote which I would like to share with you, Burijan Prabhu, about this. I think you will like it very much. It comes from Prabhupada's Lilamrita. Prabhupada said, Vrindavan is the only solitary transcendental abode within this universe where Krishna consciousness is automatically revealed. Vrindavan is the only solitary transcendental abode. Solitary means it's removed from everything else, where Krishna consciousness gets revealed. So sometimes one just needs to put a few drops into the audience, and wow, they have so many revelations which they share with you that in Vrindavan, often my audience becomes my greatest teacher. They reflect back on what they have heard, and it's a wonderful experience to see how the subjects are becoming revealed. And I've seen many times after your lectures when we don't leave immediately the tent, but when we all sit there and reflect or just turn, you know, just talk with the devotees, they say, for the first time I understand, for the first time I can see it. And I think in one of your lectures in Vashana, you gave the reason. You said in Vrindavan, the covering curtain of the material energy is very thin. It's like, at least in Germany, we have these type of curtains. They're called day curtains. They let the sun's rays very easily through. They are different from the night curtains, which are very thick, and you can't see the light of the lanterns on the street, for instance. It is not coming through so easily. Yes, so this is my answer to your question. I have an antenna with two sides. One is...
What's the title again?
Developing
Divine...
Aspirations. Developing Divine Aspirations. Aspiration, or like desires, developing divine aspirations. Yes,
that was a very, very nice thought about especially that you want, that you're very much conscious of what the devotees are requiring, because you deal so much with devotees.
Yeah.
Can I show you what my title is?
Please.
Let's see if it doesn't come out backwards. Can you see it?
Let me put my glasses on. Yes, tests along the path, the mysterious journey of Sanatan Goswami from Vrindavan to Vrindavan. Wonderful! Wow, that's a typical Vurijam Prabhu title. Very evocative when we hear it.
But also the tests, because we all have. And I was just looking at some of the material today, and I saw that there's so many very subtle things that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says and does that really answers the question on what are we supposed to do to advance in spiritual life, that really instructs us. And a look, at the same time as it instructs us, it gives us, the leelas give us the sweetness of the interaction between Mahaprabhu and the devotees, should I ask you a question, or you want to ask me a question now?
Well, please ask your question. It is
when you think of the Govardhan retreats, what is the strongest memory you have of an experience that you or we had with the devotees there? Without thinking too much, but what one just appears?
What immediately pops up was, we had our opening of the Govardhan retreats on the roof of the Balkrishna Bhavan. The atmosphere was just so absolutely beautiful. The sun was setting on the western horizon. It had a special, very soft glow. And we all sat there looking towards Govardhan. And at that time, two things happened. A white cow walked on the slope of Giriraj Govardhan, and a little later, one of these Nila guys, these bluish-black antelopes, also walked. And both of them seemed to mind entirely their own business, not at all, aware of the few hundred people staring at them, just only maybe 50, what is it, 25 meters away. My experience at that time, or my feeling at that time was, yes, Giriraj Govardhan, you are in another dimension. I'm standing here on this side of the river of birth and death, but I can look over the gap. I can look over the river and see on the other side a total different land, with an entirely different dimension. That was I was overwhelmed for a short minute. Yes, I remember all these things when we put lights around the Surabhi Kund, and it was, and night came, and there was this most beautiful light decorations with little oil lamps burning in clay cups. Was
in Kirtan.
Kirtan.
Yeah.
It seems when Vrindavan night falls over the land, then the other more mystical dimension of Vrindavan shines through. I can remember that that rain, devastating monsoon-like rain in our tent, where we needed to dig ditches on the side of the tent to somehow manage the water, and how still the water came in, and we said to everyone, let's move a little together, it's Vrindavan. I remember when Indradyumna Maharaj visited us, I remember the kirtans he did, and the shawl from Mongolia which he brought for me. And I remember when we did this kirtan and Fakir Mohan left his body far away in Orissa, and for a moment it seemed that his soul was there at in the tent saying goodbye to all of us, because he acknowledged, he was informed we would do kirtan on his path to support him in this difficult time of leaving the body. I have so many memories, but if you ask me for that one memory, it is when I was sitting on the roof, the sun was setting in the west with a soft glow, when we all looked towards Giriraj, and that white cow, it looked like a cow from Krishna's herd, somehow walked into our vision, and a little later that bluish antelope, or black-blue antelope, then I noticed here is, it's something which is difficult to say, to express, but I really noticed, yes, there is something, there is a reality on the other side of the river of birth and death, and we are privileged to just
a good word to describe it. Blessed.
Blessed, yes, we are blessed. They are not so spectacular, but for me this is the deepest.
Yeah. Do you remember when we'd be sitting underneath the trees and the parrots would be coming, and they have their homes in the hollows of the trees, especially around noontime, or a little after noontime, they would be coming and squawking, and you just get a glimpse of these are the places where Krishna actually walked with his cows, and the cowherd boys, and the gopis, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu walked in these areas, and the six Goswamis walked in these areas, and the parrots are squawking and acting like parrots. Yeah. Something very special.
Yes, yes, I remember.
So I think the last question, before we have some time for questions and answers from the devotees who may be listening, if they have any questions. There's being in Vrindavan and having our retreats and speaking there, and the devotees are all there. They're free from their usual activities. They're sitting there with nothing else to do. And yet, due to circumstances, we have our virtual Govardhan retreats. So is there value, do you see? Well, of course there's value, but what's the difference between the virtual Govardhan retreats in your experience and understanding, and the ones where we're sitting actually in the shelter of Guru Raj Govardhan?
I have thought about this.
Excuse me, this one we won't take. Stop.
It's really like in Vrindavan. Remember when we are suddenly overwhelmed by loud music, it's usually marriage music, you know, which comes at the end of the Govardhan retreat. During the marriage music, there are these loud moving music boxes, bands, and so on. So this was Handel and Bach, maybe, or some different music. But yes, I really think there is a difference, and between sitting there in the dust of Vrindavan, feeling the breezes, hearing the parrots chirp, and dealing with all these beautiful, unpredictable things that happen in Vrindavan. Like, remember the time where we lectured and a huge bull came and stood for a long time there, and I first didn't know what does he want, but then I became peaceful, and so there are these unpredictable things which happen, and you have to be there, really. Now, but there is something in our scriptures which says if you can't physically be in Vrindavan, then you should be there mentally. And these Govardhan retreats bring us mentally there. These online retreats, I wanted to say, bring us mentally there. I think we all felt surprised last year how much of the Vrindavan atmosphere came through even in the online presentation. And
we felt, so many devotees said that they felt like they were in Vrindavan.
Yeah. So, yes, it is the online retreats can help us to mentally go there. But I still am a strong advocate that for refreshing your memories of Vrindavan also by visits. It's so much more easy for you if you have created memories through actual visits in Vrindavan or at Govardhan. It's so much more easier to then mentally remember. I believe going to Vrindavan physically, going, attending such programs as the Govardhan retreat, where there is only Krishna Katha going on, prepare us so that our mental residence or going in the mind to Vrindavan is easier. And I encourage all of us to do both, to physically go and to then collect memories and practice what I would like to call everyday sacredness, that every day you enter into a sacred space where you connect in your mind with these subjects which are related to Krishna, his dealings with his devotees, his attractive flute play, the beautiful hue of his body, the enchanting smile, and when he is, especially when he is accompanied by Srimati Radharani. To remember all this becomes definitely easier if you go physically to these sacred places. But in the absence, when this is not possible, because now there is travel, there are still travel restrictions, or it may be not possible eventually due to old age or other things that prevent you, then you go mentally, then you visit online projects, online lectures more and more. What would you say about this question? I'm very interested. Online, offline, physical, mental residence.
It's easier. And the job, in one sense, is service when you're in Vrindavan, is to collect experiences. Because at the time, ultimately, when we have to leave this world, we want to be able to access the experiences, the deepest spiritual experiences that we can. And that's really the job of life. And to trust those experiences so deeply that when it's time to leave this world, when we may not be in Vrindavan, we'll be able to still be in Vrindavan in the mind. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
As much as we practically can. But just what you said, I don't have anything to add really to what you said. You said it very well. Well, we can. Well, Krishna gives us the ability, either physically or by the airlines or the government restrictions or no restrictions. Well, we can if we are very fortunate and if we are greedy to collect the jewels of experience, then if we have the ability, we should go to Vrindavan, Sridhar Mayapur, and we should be greedy to hear and chant in the association of devotees in these holy places. And if we have that eagerness, certainly Krishna will reciprocate with us in his own way and give us the jewels that we require to make us spiritually wealthy, which we all desire.
Yes, yes, yes.
You want, should we ask the devotees if they have any questions for us?
Yes, this is a very, very good idea. we all.
I don't know how to do that exactly.
Yeah. Here, the first question already pops up. How can we prepare our consciousness for attending the online Govardhan retreat? Yes, that's a very good thing. I would like to say that a retreat, online or physical, in physical attendance in at the feet of Govardhan can only really speak to you when your heart is eager to and open. When the heart is not eager and open, it is difficult. I want to show you this glass. When you put a glass like this in the rain, the rain will flow left and right and not fill the glass. You have to put the glass like this with the open side facing the rain, and then it can become filled with the rainwater. In the same way, our eagerness, our openness will very much determine our experience of the upcoming online retreat. Especially, see, because you're not sitting there, you're not hearing the parrots chirping, you're not seeing the cows wandering, feeling the dust, you're not being touched by the breezes, so you have to open your heart, and it's good to do so by preparing yourself a little bit better. I intend to go in the beginning of February on an Ayurvedic Panchakarma treatment. It's 9 days long, and they tell you before, if you want to have higher results, then prepare your body by being careful to not eat too late, by eating light food, because then the treatment can work so much better. So in the same way, if you want to go to the Govardhan online retreat, it's good if you prepare yourself a little by awakening your awareness of these spiritual subjects. I always request devotees, why don't you make it a habit to read in the Bhagavatam before? Why don't you make it a habit to get up earlier and chant a little bit the rounds in a very, very sacred space where you're not disturbed at all? And then you prepare your heart a little bit so that the real desires come out, the real eagerness can come out, and then it will sink in much better than you have an open glass, so to say. That would be my answer.
I was thinking in the practical sense also, that we try to make practical arrangements so that we're undisturbed during that time, and we're not doing anything else, and not doing other things during that time, have the focus on just on the hearing and the chanting, and turn off your mobile phone.
Yeah, that's a very, by the way, Bhujampabu's suggestion is...
I learned it because I got to hold this.
Yeah, but the suggestion which Bhujampabu just made is really very, very good. Try to take part in the online retreat almost as if you go on retreat. The time is ideal. It's in the beginning of January, when there's not so much going on anyways. Then just say, I'm for, I don't know, 4 days or however long it is, I'm on retreat. Focus during this time. And not just during the online sessions, try to give yourself time during this time. It's me time, time where you take care of yourself, where you ask yourself these questions: am I only existing, or am I really living a life where I grow, where I discover new things, where I take on new inspirations in my life, where I think about the directions where I would like my life to go to. Try to use this time exclusively for a retreat. It's a, you know, retreats are nowadays where we are overwhelmed with internet, overwhelmed with worries, overwhelmed with whatever else. They are so important to find yourself and to find your relationship with Krishna. So make time, yes. Either you need to plan it a little bit. Okay, I'm sorry. For 4 days, I'm on a retreat. I'm making a personal retreat, and then it will be an unforgettable 4 days. I would really push out all the things which can be pushed out and let them wait outside these 4 days, outside the boundaries of this sacred time for you, and then be fully there both during the retreat and as retreats, during the online sessions, I wanted to say, and then outside of them, and this will be very good. I just did 2 days of this here where I am after my England tour. I just stopped everything else and I'm on my personal retreat. I'm reading the books which need to be read while on retreat, Stavam Mala and so on. I'm chanting nicely. I'm taking also walks in between so that my health is nicely cultivated. In this way, I have my own retreat already since two days, and I will end it in the afternoon when I become active again on the online media. Good.
I don't know how much more time we have. There's one.
Yeah. By Sunny Tyagi, Hare Krishna Maharaji. Should we expect 2022's November retreat taking place at Govardhan Ashraya? Yeah, that's the name of the Govardhan Retreat Center, the new retreat center. I want to ask you, pray sincerely that it is possible. We are making plans like this, and we sincerely want to do it. I mean, we also we have Vrindavan Vinod at the place and his building team. There are about 50 plus workers working tirelessly, carrying the remaining tiles and so on, and putting them on, and planting trees, etc., etc. It's a humble offering from Burijan Prabhu and myself, so we are very enthusiastic. But let us, I always say, we give our best, let Krishna do the rest. So yes, but my request is, don't just expect it to be there 2022 in November. Pray for it.
Hare Krishna Prasanta.